Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. We hope all of you had an enjoyable holiday weekend. We open our show today with an update on our story last week about changes in the county ambulance services, specifically a response from Supervisor Jacob's office clarifying some improvements that have been made. On Crime Beat, hear about a San Diego man who was the first in the nation to be convicted of operating a revenge porn site. We'll tell you about some big questions being raised about water hogs in California, meaning corporations that are using up precious water resources while the rest of us are being asked to conserve. A suspected arsonist has been arrested in City Heights, and in Spring Valley, a fire has displaced 10 residents. Have you ever heard a sound in the night that sounded like a woman screaming? You might be surprised to find out what large wild animal found in our region has a very similar cry, and be sure to look before you go outdoors if you hear it. Speaking of interesting animals, scientists have discovered a peptide found in opossums that holds the key to developing an anti-venom for snake bites, and we'll have some fascinating details. We'll also tell you about a new habitat for Teddy and Baloo, two rescued bears in Alpine. Hobby Lobby is coming to La Mesa. The retailer that drew national attention for winning a case before the Supreme Court in order to deny employees health insurance coverage for certain forms of birth control based on the owner's religious views. Our Brewbeat columnist, Ed Barena, will tell you about four San Diego breweries ranked among the tops in the nation in a recent survey. Those super skinny models won't be strutting the runways in Paris anymore. Hear how France's actions to protect young women from anorexia may impact the fashion industry worldwide, and how widespread eating disorders are right here in the U.S. A new federal report finds that medical marijuana can kill cancer cells and shrink certain brain tumors, and yet the Justice Department is doubling down on prosecutions against California marijuana dispensaries, and we'll have details. In El Cajon, a mother is under arrest for driving under the influence of drugs after her 3-year-old daughter was killed in a collision over the weekend. The driver may have been asleep at the wheel, authorities say. Ironically, yesterday was Drowsy Driver Awareness Day. We'll have information about a new car that has a special feature to alert drowsy drivers, and then we'll replay our interview last year with former CHP officer Phil Constantine, whose own wife died after falling asleep at the wheel. We'll tell you about a photo contest being held by the City of Lemon Grove, and we'll replay our interview at the Fund for Animals Wildlife Rescue Center in Ramona. And finally, we'll have news on our Capitol report about a new bill by Congresswoman Susan Davis to combat sexual assaults on college campuses. So stay tuned for today's East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters. This is Miriam Raftery with an update on our story about the county's new ambulance service for rural communities in East County. As we reported, effective April 1st, the county has shifted to Mercy as its new ambulance provider for rural East County. After some residents and emergency response experts raised concerns over coverage, response times, and mutual aid, we asked Supervisor Diane Jacob's office for a response. Her office has forwarded a reply put together by county staff. Staff contends that the county has been working to increase paramedic fire response in East County, stating the combination of Mercy Ambulance Service and new fire paramedics mean paramedic coverage is stronger than ever before. Zone 2, the affected area, extends from Jamul to Jacumba at the Imperial County line and from Otay at the Mexican border north to Mount Laguna. The staff response states the new contract puts 6 ambulances in Zone 2, up from 4. 4 new county-funded CAL FIRE 24/7 paramedic engines at Otay Mesa, Jamul, Pine Valley, and Lake Morena, and 3 more coming online in the next few months, including 24/7 paramedic engines in Jacumba and Descanso. In other words, by July 1st, county-funded paramedic services will have gone from 4 ambulances to 13 paramedic units, 6 ambulances, and 7 paramedic engines. The Fire Authority / CAL FIRE Advanced Life Support, or ALS, units are positioned at stations closest to rural population centers and areas with the highest volume of calls. Last year, the fire authority's average response time was just over 10 minutes, so according to staff, the new system means in most cases residents and visitors can expect a paramedic firefighter to arrive first to start advanced care, with the ambulance paramedic arriving about the same time or close behind to assist in transport. The contract requires a minimum of 4 ambulances, and Mercy is not bound by the contract to any specific number of ambulances. Instead, Mercy must meet response time standards. However, the county contract only requires that in rural areas, 90% of calls will be answered in 30 minutes or less, and that is too long to save a heart attack patient or for certain serious trauma cases. Staff says the former provider achieved an average response time of 14 minutes with 4 ambulances, and Mercy plans to serve the area with 6 ambulances, so residents should see similar or better response times, the county maintains. Now, according to the county staff, Mercy has 9 mutual aid agreements in place, but here's the catch. Only 2 are in writing so far and signed. And both of those are from agencies that are very far away. Schaefer in Imperial County and Mesa Grande at a Native American reservation in a remote mountain area. Another 7 mutual aid agreements have been reached orally. Lakeside, Santee, Julian, Barona, Rural Metro, Viejas, and Sequan, according to county staff and Mercy. Now, we asked why those agreements are not in writing. The county staff responded, Mercy and the cooperating agencies are in the process of developing the documentation for all agreements, and the county expects the timeline to be typical for interagency agreements. That is, it will vary by agency, depending on each agency's review process, staffing, etc. While the agreement documentation is being finalized, the agreements themselves are operational, and there is no reason to believe any agency won't honor them. Staff adds that the mutual aid agreements have been incorporated into dispatch software and procedures, and agencies will respond to mutual aid calls when dispatched. The staff response concludes, if there was ever information that this was not occurring while the written agreements are being finalized, the county, which is monitoring the contract closely, would take immediate action.
A San Diego man who operated a revenge porn site called YouGotPosted.com has been sentenced to 18 years in jail after being convicted on 21 counts of identity theft and 6 counts of extortion. Kevin Bullard is the first person in the nation to be prosecuted for operating a revenge porn site. Bullard's website encouraged people to post nude images, names and locations of their ex-spouses or partners without the permission of the victims. Adding insult to injury, he then had the audacity to then charge victims a fee to remove their photos and information, such as links to their Facebook and other social media accounts through another site he called ChangeMyReputation.com. The Union Tribune San Diego reports Bullard made over $30,000 from this extortion. Bullard, when asked why he did this, he told a special agent for the state attorney general's office that he did it because, quote, it was just fun, unquote. Strangers would post explicit comments, and some victims reported even threats, causing victims to fear for their safety. One woman told the judge she became homeless after her parents, with whom she lived, learned of the photos and threw her out of the home. Bullard, on the other hand, has been ordered to pay restitution to his victims, and he now will serve his time in county jail since his offenses were nonviolent and thus could be eligible for parole after 9 years. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Richard Faust.
This is Kristen Caro with East County Magazine's Green Scene Report. The governor's order imposing mandatory water cuts of 25% statewide amid this fourth year of drought has prompted media reports asking why water-hogging uses are still being allowed. With wells running dry, farmers' fields lay fallow, and ordinary Californians are being asked to conserve water. Should many millions of gallons of water use be allowed for fracking by oil industries, corporations, major energy, and development projects? Fracking by oil companies uses 70 million gallons last year in California, Reuters reported, or about 100,000 gallons for every fracking well. While not all of that is drinking water, and some is later cleaned up for reuse, concerns remain. Nestle has drawn fire for selling bottled water out of state extracted from springs in California, even where neighbors' wells have gone dry, prompting protesters carrying pitchforks to urge state intervention. East County residents have objected to massive water use by SDG&E's Eco Substation, which used over 90 million gallons of water, and to Soitec's proposed solar projects, which an SDSU hydrologist predicted could destroy the ecosystem and drain groundwater resources beyond what could be replenished by rainfall. The reader asks why water use hasn't been a key issue in the debate over One Paseo, a proposed 1.4 million square foot development in Carmel Valley to feature residential, office, and retail space. The same issues apply to development proposed in Mission Valley and to any proposed football stadium for the Chargers. After all, the reader notes, the United States Geological Survey and scientists from Cornell and the University of Arizona last year published a prediction that the odds are 50% that the Southwest will have a drought lasting a decade or more, and a 20 to 50% chance that a mega drought lasting up to 35 years will occur in the next century.
A suspect is under arrest for suspected arson in City Heights. The Metro Arson Strike Team announced the arrest of 24-year-old Rolando Resendiz. Resendiz was seen walking away from a fire that was intentionally set on the porch of a home on Ogden Street. San Diego Fire Rescue crews swiftly doused the blaze, which caused $400 in damages. Channel 10 reports over a dozen other fires believed to be arson have occurred recently in City Heights, and detectives have found evidence linking Resendiz to two of them. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
If you've ever thought you heard a woman screaming at night, it just might be something else. A female mountain lion's call, in fact, has often been described as sounding like a woman's scream. Here is a call that was caught by a trail cam. Such sounds are not unusual in rural East County. Recently, mountain lions have been heard in the Deerhorn Valley area, the Deerhound Valley Antler editor Kim Hamilton reports. Now, if you hear a mountain lion or you know they're in your community, be sure to keep your dogs and cats indoors, especially at night, and keep an eye on young children playing outdoors. Be sure livestock, such as chickens, are in a protected shelter, too, and if you see one, consider yourself lucky to see one of nature's amazing animals. Mountain lions and other natural predators serve a positive role in the ecosystem, helping to keep other wildlife populations under control, and they are protected under California law. Kim Hamilton calls the recent recovery of lions, bobcats, and coyotes in her community a very healthy sign for Deerhorn Valley's recovery from the 2007 wildfire devastation. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A fire in Spring Valley destroyed two homes early Friday morning, displacing 10 residents. The two-alarm blaze in the 1600 block of Tarleton Street broke out around 12:30 a.m. and took 2 hours for CAL FIRE crews to knock down, 10 News reports. Paramedics evaluated some residents for smoke inhalation, but none required hospitalization. Sheriff's investigators are working to determine the cause of the fire. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Kristen Caro.
Typically, possums aren't thought of as a powerhouse in the animal kingdom. The term playing possum, after all, refers to one way possums react to predators, by playing dead. But it turns out that possums, or if you prefer, opossums, have a peptide that gives them a natural immunity to snake bites and other toxins. And now scientists are working to harness it to create antivenoms for humans. Scientists have isolated the antivenom peptide, and in lab tests with mice that have been exposed to their venoms, those possum peptides have proved effective against western diamondback rattlers as well as even Russell's vipers from Pakistan. The results offer hope that a universal antivenom could be developed to counter the poisonous effects of snake bites from multiple species, so reports the National Geographic. That's big news, since worldwide it is estimated that upwards of 420,000 poisonous snake bites occur every year, resulting in over 20,000 deaths, according to the International Society on Toxicology. Human testing is expected soon. Moreover, Newswise reports, scientists have found they could reproduce the peptide from E. coli bacteria, meaning it could be replicated cheaply and easily. So no possums need to be harmed in the process. Also, this replication, unlike standard snake bite antivenoms, has thus far produced no serious side effects such as wheezing, rash, or rapid heartbeat. The antivenom may even prove effective against other forms of toxins, since possums also possess a natural resistance to poisonous scorpions and some forms of toxic plants as well. The results were presented in late March at the National Meeting and Exposition of the American Chemical Society in Denver. The possum, which resembles a large rat, is a marsupial tracing its origins back 65 million years, give or take. Around the time dinosaurs went extinct, but only now we have learned a key secret to its survival against threats that may have killed many other animals. So the next time you see a lowly possum hanging by its tree, or if you see it wandering across the road, remember, this ancient animal just may hold the key to saving your life if you're ever bitten by a snake. This public service health report is by Richard Faust for East County Magazine.
Hobby Lobby is coming to La Mesa. The national craft and home decor retailer has announced plans to open a store on Grossmont Boulevard off Jackson Drive. Hobby Lobby drew national controversy recently when it filed suit to challenge the Affordable Care Act. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled that Hobby Lobby does not have to pay for certain forms of birth control for its employees due to the conservative Christian owner's religious objections. The decision applied only to closely held family-owned companies. The Oklahoma-based retailer operates over 650 stores and is listed by Forbes and Fortune magazine among the nation's largest retail companies. La Mesa Today reports that the new store is expected to hire about 35 to 50 employees. For more information, visit www.hobbylobby.com. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Kristen Caro.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Teddy and Baloo, two moon bears, also known as Himalayan black bears, were released this week into a new multi-acre habitat at the Lions, Tigers, and Bears Sanctuary in Alpine. Bobby Brink, the owner and founder of the nonprofit sanctuary, says, "We were so happy to see these bear brothers romping and playing in their new home." Teddy and Baloo give their paw of approval to their enriching new habitat. Area residents have donated to fund the new lifetime habitat for the bears, which were rescued from a private zoo owner unable to continue caring for the animals. For more information about how you can go see Teddy and Baloo and the other animals at the sanctuary, you can visit lionstigersandbears.org.
This is Ed Barenum with Brewbeat, covering San Diego's craft beer industry in East County. The Brewers Association is a nonprofit trade group based in Boulder, Colorado, which represents small and independent craft brewers. On March 31st, they released their annual list of the top 50 craft brewing companies for 2014. Four San Diego brewers made the list, including one in the top 10. The list was compiled from data on beer sales volume. The top San Diego craft brewer was Stone Brewing Company, which is based in Escondido. They were ranked number 9 on the list, and they have always pushed the limits on their beers, from the bold flavors to the company logo itself, which features a fierce-looking gargoyle holding a stein. That strategy seems to have paid off, as they are set to open breweries in Virginia and even in Berlin, the UT San Diego reports. Next on the list, ranking at number 31, is Ballast Point Brewing and Spirits. Famous for their line of beers featuring marine-themed names such as Sculpin, Longfin, and Sea Monster, Ballast Point takes pride in the seafaring tradition of San Diego. Coming in at number 45 is a San Diego staple, Carl Strauss. Their Red Trolley Ale is a well-known craft beer, and their restaurants can be found throughout the region and beyond. They offer a fine variety of many traditional and experimental brews. Finally, making their debut in the top 50 is Green Flash Brewing Company at number 48. Their famous West Coast India Pale Ale has no doubt influenced brewers all over, with its bitter and hoppy finish. A true West Coast brewing operation, Green Flash is based in San Diego and creates a wide variety of beers with creative names such as Le Freak and Palate Wrecker. With so many acclaimed brews in San Diego, it's no wonder that our region is becoming world famous as a beer capital. The full list of craft brewers can be found at www.brewersassociation.org. Remember, though, you must be 21 or older to drink beer, and please drink responsibly.
Super skinny models will no longer be strutting the fashion runways in Paris. On Friday, France, a leader in the fashion industry, passed a new law that bans anorexic models. The measure also imposes fines and prison time for fashion houses or agents who employ underweight models, and the move is expected to create waves throughout the fashion industry around the world. Models must obtain a medical certificate showing a body mass index that is appropriate for their height before being hired, and again a few weeks after getting the job in France. France joined similar bans passed by Italy and Spain to protect the health of women and girls in the modeling business. The move comes after the death of Isabelle Caro, a French fashion model who died in 2010 after raising awareness about her battle with anorexia. In addition to banning the use of anorexic models, the new law also prohibits publication of photos that have been altered to make models look thinner, unless the photo carries a message stating that the image was changed. Websites that promote anorexia will also be outlawed in France. The action was controversial, with some arguing that French fashion models could be at a disadvantage vying against foreign models worldwide. But health concerns won out, and more nations are now considering bans on overly thin models, such as in Brazil. Anorexia, or self-starvation, can result in heart weakness, high blood pressure, loss of bone density, and death. Anorexia has the highest death rate of any psychiatric disorder. Reuters reports that in France alone, an estimated 30,000 to 40,000 people suffer from anorexia, and 90% of them are teenagers. In the United States, the problem is even more extensive. An estimated 20 million women and 10 million men in the U.S. suffer from eating disorders, including anorexia, bulimia, and binge eating disorders. Unrealistic portrayals of idealized body types in the media and the fashion industry contribute to self-image problems, particularly in young people, medical experts conclude. For more information on eating disorders and what to do about them, you can visit nationaleatingdisorders.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson with the Health Report on East County Magazine. The National Institute on Drug Abuse issued a report this month titled, Is Marijuana Medicine? It concludes that recent animal studies have shown that marijuana can kill certain cancer cells and reduce the size of others. Evidence from one animal study suggests that extracts from whole plant marijuana can shrink one of the most serious types of brain tumors. The report from the federally backed group reflects research findings published in the Molecular Cancer Therapies Journal last November. In that study, researchers from St. George's University of London found dramatic reductions in glioma, the deadly form of brain cancer that killed Senator Ted Kennedy, when patients were treated with a combination of radiation and two marijuana compounds known as cannabinoids. In many cases, researchers found the tumors shrunk to one-tenth the size of those in the control groups. Researchers used a combination of tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC, the psychoactive compound, and CBD, which does not produce a high sensation. Used alone, THC has also been shown to cut tumor growth in lung cancer in half and to have significant impacts on other forms of cancer. The National Institute on Drug Abuse report also concludes that CBD may be useful in reducing pain and inflammation, controlling epileptic seizures, and possibly even treating mental illness and addictions. THC reduces nausea and increases appetite and may be useful in other conditions such as treatment of inflammation, pain, and muscle control problems, the report states. Despite these findings, the Justice Department this week announced it will keep prosecuting cases against medical marijuana dispensaries in California. The Los Angeles Times reports that even though Congress passed legislation last year that ordered the Justice Department to back off on enforcement of medical marijuana in states where it is legal, Drug Policy Alliance Director of National Affairs Bill Piper, in an editorial published in the Huffington Post, notes that 23 states and the District of Columbia have legalized medical marijuana. He concludes the Justice Department is ignoring the will of the voters, defying Congress, and breaking the law. Piper called on President Obama and Attorney General Eric Holder to rein in what he calls an out-of-control agency, and further urged Congress to change federal drug laws so that states can enact their own laws without fear that the federal government will prosecute medical marijuana patients or providers.
A 31-year-old mother is under arrest after a crash killed her 3-year-old daughter and injured two of her other children in the vehicle Saturday night. The accident was reported at 9:43 p.m. on Broadway in El Cajon. According to witnesses, the silver Hyundai driven by Brandy Teague was traveling east when it left the roadway and collided with a telephone pole. Lieutenant Szilard with the El Cajon Police Department says the driver may have fallen asleep behind the wheel before the collision occurred. Teague is charged with gross vehicular manslaughter, driving under the influence of drugs, possession of a controlled substance, and driving on a suspended license. She has been booked into the Las Colinas Women's Detention Facility in Santee. Her three children, ages 10, 3, and 2 years old, were immediately transported to Children's Hospital, and the driver was taken to Sharp Hospital for treatment of pain. Shortly after arriving at Children's Hospital, however, the 3-year-old girl was pronounced dead as a result of her injuries. The two other children were admitted with serious injuries, but fortunately, those are not considered life-threatening. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson with a public service announcement for the City of Lemon Grove. The city is calling on all photographers, amateurs, professionals, adults, and youths to enter the city's first annual photo contest. Photographers are encouraged to showcase Lemon Grove's environment and architecture. However, all photos must contain an image of a lemon or lemon-related object, such as blossoms or trees, and be taken within the Lemon Grove city limits. The deadline to submit photos is April 30th. The application states, Lemon Grove is embedded with a rich history built around rose plentiful with citrus trees, and lemon growing became the town's largest industry. Celebrate the culture of Lemon Grove by entering your best image based around the iconic symbol of the lemon. Winners will be honored at a city council meeting, and all images submitted may be used in city marketing materials. Entries must be digital, and each photographer may submit up to 3 images. You can pick up entry forms at Lemon Grove City Hall or online at the city's website.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Thousands of people are killed or injured each year because someone was driving while they were drowsy. Now, Nissan has a new addition to some of their cars to help prevent this. April 6th is Drowsy Driver Awareness Day, and Nissan says their new driver attention alert system has come out just in time to help prevent more needless loss. The system analyzes a driver's habitats and warns them if they appear to be falling asleep. Local reporter and retired CHP officer Phil Constantine says this could be helpful along with other less technical practices. In 1999, Constantine's wife, Robin, fell asleep and died while she was driving from Florida to San Diego. According to the AAA, 1 in 5 fatal crashes are the result of drowsy driving. Almost 40% of all drivers admit to having fallen asleep while behind the wheel. Constantine says at the first sign of getting sleepy, you should get off the road, taking a break every 2 hours, while making a long trip can also help to keep you awake. A cool breeze and listening to talk radio rather than music can also help. For more information, visit drowsydriving.com. For more information, visit drowsydriverawarenessday.com. And now we're going to replay an interview that we did last year with Officer Phil Constantine, and it's as timely today as it was when we recorded it 1 year ago on Drowsy Driver Awareness Day. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. My guest today is Phil Constantine. Phil is a TV news traffic reporter. He's with Channel 8 currently. He's done a number of other stations in town, both TV and radio. A lot of you may know him as Officer Phil from Channel 10, but he's also a former California Highway Patrol officer. And so today we're going to be talking about his efforts to champion raising awareness of the dangers of driving drowsy. Phil, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Now, your cause is drawing awareness to drowsy driving. Can you tell our listeners what made you first realize what a problem this is?
Well, part of my job with the Highway Patrol, I was a public affairs officer, so one of the things I used to do was give speeches and inform the public of all the things you should do, shouldn't do when you're driving out there. Some folks may remember me from being on Channel 10. I was Officer Phil that you saw for years and years.
That's right.
On Channel 10. Mm-hmm. I talked about a lot of these things, did a lot of research into all the driving issues that existed out there. But in April of 1999, my wife's mother decided to get a new car. So she was going to let Robin, my wife, have her old car. So Robin flew out to Florida and drove the car back. Well, one day she spent the night in Houston visiting some friends. She got up early in the morning and left Houston and headed back to San Diego. And she made it almost to El Paso. And it was started just around sunset. And according to a truck driver out there, she appeared to be nodding off. And she crashed her car. And unfortunately, she died there at the scene. She was stuck in the car for a couple of hours.
Tragic.
And it is a very sad situation. I think of it as being extremely ironic in that one of my jobs was to warn people of the dangers of driving, including drowsy driving. But not only that, she had just passed a rest area about 2 miles before she crashed. So the situation is that drowsy driving, the phrase I love to use, is it's very insidious in that it sneaks up on you. Robin was an excellent driver, and yet it still snuck up on her, and it's happened to me as well.
Yeah, it's happened to you, so you've fallen asleep behind the wheel.
A long time ago, back in 1972, I believe it was, my son was very sick as a baby, and he went into a hospital that was about 60 miles from where I lived. It was a university hospital. He was there for 18 days, so after I would get through with work, I would drive down to the hospital, spend time with him. And so it was a lot of time being awake for work, being awake for him. And one day driving back home, I'm driving down the freeway, which was the freeway from Galveston to Houston, very wide center median. And as I'm driving along, next thing I know, I wake up and I'm in the middle of the center divider, fortunately, very wide open area. Stopped. Nobody hurt. Nothing happened.
A wake-up call, though, for
absolutely.
Not driving.
And wake-up call is the important thing.
Right.
It wasn't me that was causing myself to wake up. It's when I felt the changing in the road texture that made me wake up.
This can really happen to anyone. If it can happen to a CHP officer, it can happen to anyone. And I will say it's happened to me, too, when my when I had a brand new newborn baby at home and I was about 2 or 3 months into that new mom thing of no sleep, total sleep deprivation, I fell asleep at the wheel. And thankfully, I was stopped at a light at the time. I had my foot on the brake and all of a sudden I heard a horn behind me and woke up and realized what had happened. No accident, so I was very lucky. But
and I can even ask you this. You didn't notice it happening, did you?
I had absolutely no idea.
And that's the problem with this.
Didn't
Everybody
feel it
thinks,
on.
You know, well, you know, if I think I'm going to be sleepy, I'll do something about it. Well, it sneaks up on you, particularly if you're in those circumstances where you're already sleep deprived or if you're driving during a period of time when you don't normally drive. For some folks, there's a thing called circadian rhythms. For some folks, 2 to 3 o'clock, 2 to 4 o'clock in the afternoon is when they tend to get a little bit sleepy. That can happen then. Or if you're awake much longer than you normally would be, and then you're driving there toward the end of what would be your day.
Or driving, I've read, during the hours when you normally would be sleeping.
Absolutely.
And that's another thing. How common is it for people to drive drowsy? I know that the figures are absolutely staggering on this.
Well, several studies have been done over the years. The vast majority of people have admitted to driving drowsy at least once in their life, to the point where they're nodding off, and maybe not, obviously not crashing, but nodding off at one time or another. And one survey, people reporting this themselves, responding to surveys, said that 37% of the time, or 37% of the people answered their surveys during the last year had reported nodding off while driving.
Wow, that's really scary.
And you think about that, you know, one out of every three people out there on the road. Now, that doesn't mean they're nodding off all the time. That's reporting at least once.
Do you have stats on how many actual accidents are caused by drowsy driving?
Well, all of this is very underreported, first off. I'll give you some numbers, but it's all very underreported. The reason why is this, is if you fall asleep and have a collision, it's your fault.
Right.
So a lot of people, assuming they survive, will not admit it.
Right.
They'll say, oh, well, you know, a black cat ran across the road, or, you know, a bird hit my window, a bee inside, whatever, some guy cut me off. They won't admit to it. But of the ones who admit to it, it's between 40 and 70,000 crashes a year.
Wow.
Nationally that are caused, as this being the primary factor involved.
In terms of how badly it impairs you just to be sleepy, how does that compare with other forms of impairment, say alcohol?
Right. According to the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, they have determined that if you're driving about 18 hours, if you've been awake for about 18 hours, it's the rough equivalent of a 0.05, which is a little bit less than the legal limit here in California. If you've been awake for at least 24 hours, then it's roughly 0.10, which is above the legal limit just about everywhere in the United States. Now, there's a lot of industries that keep people awake. Doctors, which has always surprised me. Doctors will do 12, 16-hour shifts, which seems
even longer. Some of those residencies, it's incredible.
Absolutely. You go take a one-hour nap and come back out and being operated on by somebody in the emergency room.
Long-distance truck drivers, I imagine, would be on that list.
Long-distance truck drivers are very much a circumstance. There's an Academy Award cinematographer that did a documentary called Who Needs Sleep? And basically, the average movie set, they work 12 to 16 hours.
Oh, interesting.
And on a regular basis. And more than one member of the crew, because they don't have drivers taking them home, have crashed after a long work day.
I understand a high percentage of these crashes occur among young people. And I'm guessing that maybe all that cramming for final exams might have something to do with it, not to mention partying, of course. But so young people,
young men, 20 to 28, that general age bracket there. First off, a lot of folks in that age bracket think they're invincible.
Yeah.
So they may notice that they may have a problem. No big deal. I can handle it. But as it turns out, one of the more common groups is the young men, 20 to 28-ish in that age. So you were talking about yourself, people who are already sleep deprived. So if you're a young parent or a new parent, be an old parent, but a new parent, you don't get much sleep because the baby's always crying. So if you're walking into driving already sleep deprived, or if you're yawning before you start to drive because you're tired, that's not a good time to get in there. So you're more inclined to do it in those circumstances as well.
How much sleep should the average person be getting?
There's a wide variety. That's an individual kind of situation. Some people can get by perfectly well on 4 hours. The average person needs about 6 to 8 hours of sleep.
So basically, now, understand your own limits and how much you need. And if you haven't had enough, try to avoid driving.
Right. You mentioned a little bit ago as though that if you're changing your sleeping patterns, that's a time when it may be more of an effect on you than if you are doing just your regular drive. Now, again, that 2 to 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, a lot of people aren't driving then, but after you've had lunch, I've taught classes in the CHP Academy, I've taken classes in the CHP Academy, and if you've had a long, hard day, rigorous exercise, a lot of work, after you've eaten, you have a tendency to be dulled and lulled into a sleeping situation.
It's like Thanksgiving, the turkey coma sets in, that tryptophan.
The tryptophan is exact circumstance when this happens. So you may find yourself getting tired. And now most people don't drive between 2 and 4 o'clock if you work normal business hours. So you'll find yourself maybe if you're driving out there, the rhythm of the wheels, the rhythm of the traffic, and sometimes the music you may be listening to has a tendency to just sort of work like a lullaby, and you may nod off suddenly.
Yeah, I've heard that listening to talk radio as opposed to music, or at least if it's music, make it lively music, or even maybe a book on tape, anything that engages the mind can be helpful.
Engaging the mind is the factor here. So if you're listening to easy listening music or love songs or Tony Bennett or any group that's an acoustic, unplugged, something like that, has a tendency to mellow you out. You think about this. Well, I want to listen to some music and mellow out or calm down.
Not what you want to listen
to at
bedtime.
That's not what you want to listen to when you're driving. Exactly.
What are some of the ways to prevent driving drowsy to begin with? Let's say you're planning a trip long distance, as your wife was. What are some of the things that might be done to prevent that kind of a tragedy?
Every hour or two, depending on the individual, but probably every hour or two, you should stop, get out of the car, walk around, stretch, do something like that.
Yeah.
Now, granted, most people, if they're filling up their fuel, refueling if you're going on a long trip, that may last, 4 hours or so. That's really too long. You really need to get up, circulate the blood. Actually, it's good for you on several medical reasons as well, sitting down for long periods of time.
You can get blood clots if you sit too long.
Exactly. So get up maybe every hour to an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours at the maximum, and just stop. Now, granted, if you're taking a long trip, it doesn't have to be too long. 3, 4, 5 minutes is all you need to do. The main thing, though, is the only absolute total cure preventative for this particular problem is if you start to feel sleepy, get off the road and get some sleep.
Very
wise
advice.
Or at least stop driving.
And what are the symptoms that you might experience that might be warning signs if, let's say, all the best planning, you still start feeling tired behind the wheel? What are some of the signs that maybe you've been driving too long?
Well, first off, all of the symptoms people have heard about for drunk driving, weaving in and out of the lanes, driving with your headlights off. One of the things I remember a lot is not remembering where you were. Just all of a sudden, you know, if, let's say you're driving from downtown San Diego to Orange County. And did I pass San Onofre? If you can't remember where you are, you've probably been falling asleep or nodding off, or at least your mind has been drifting so much, you've been driving on autopilot, that you may be able to react if something happens in front of you, but that's one of those things.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, other things is obviously yawning. Mm-hmm. You know, noticing yourself starting to fall asleep, or having, you know, noticing that it is hard to keep your eyes open, or obviously if you feel sleepy, that's an obvious symptom.
Yeah, hitting the rumble strip. Is it a good idea to keep the temperature not too comfortable, not too warm when you're driving, crack a window, get some fresh air?
Yes, absolutely. Fresh air definitely helps. Keeping it cooler than warmer. You know, a lot of occasions, if I want to go take a nap, I'm not much of a nap taker, but if I do, I'll make it warmer because it helps me go to sleep.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to drive, a little bit colder, a little window cracked, maybe the air conditioner going on. And again, the music that's upbeat, or again, talk radio, yelling at the radio probably isn't a bad idea.
I used to carry a thermos of coffee with me if I had to drive long distance. I know it's not a substitute for sleep, but if you're on that last leg, sometimes it's certainly better than just being drowsy.
Most medical studies say that coffee works better before the problem starts.
Mm-hmm.
So once you start to feel sleepy, pulling over and getting yourself a couple of cups of coffee and then going on with your six-hour drive that you have left still isn't probably a good idea.
No.
That may boost your awareness a little bit, mm-hmm. but it's going to taper off very quickly. And so it is not really a cure. The only cure or the only solution is stopping driving.
Yeah. Well, that's very, very good advice. And parents, if you're listening out there too, you've got those new young drivers that think they're invincible, be sure to talk to them and tell them about this. And Phil, when is Drowsy Driving Awareness Day coming
up? Let me add one thing there to what you just said.
Yeah.
Children, whether you be teenagers or 6 years old, if you notice the person driving the vehicle starting to nod off, make a big deal out of it. Don't give up. Pester them.
Yeah.
Pester the driver to say, you look like you're sleepy. Do you want to drive while you're sleepy? It's probably not a good idea to drive while you're sleepy.
Yeah.
All right. Now, April 6th is the day that my wife crashed her car. Fortunately, in this particular incident, nobody else was involved. She didn't crash into anybody else. But it happened on April 6th, 1999. So this will be the 15th anniversary.
I
will definitely not forget. And so with the help of the California State Senate and then the legislature, April 6th was passed. A proclamation was made, and April 6th was declared to be Drowsy Driver Awareness Day in the state of California.
Very important message to get out.
Absolutely. And so for all of those folks that are out there listening to this, thinking, well, you know, probably can't happen to me. But think about it seriously. It probably already has happened to you. Now, you obviously haven't crashed your car. Most of you haven't crashed your car.
Right.
But it has happened to you. So this is just a gentle reminder, a friendly reminder. But I wouldn't mind if it was a rude reminder, because any life that's saved is a life that's saved.
Exactly.
And even if it doesn't save your life, crashes are expensive. Nowadays, a fender bender is going to cost you several thousand dollars.
Well,
to
that's
fix.
True. Your insurance goes up and everything else.
And one thing to consider is this. Even if you think you're a macho guy or a macho gal, well, what about the other person?
Right.
If you lose your life, it's sad. But if you cause somebody else to lose their life, this is going to be something that's going to haunt you for the rest of your life.
So true. So where can people go online to get more information about this, Phil? I understand you have a website.
I do have a website. Everybody has one. Well, I've had one for quite some time now. It's a long one, drowsydriveawarenessday.com.net.org. It's all of those, but Drowsy Driver Awareness Day, all of those is one word. And that will get you to my website where I tell Robin's story, where I talk about the symptoms, things you can do to prevent it.
You got some videos up there too?
Videos, public service announcements I did while I was with the Highway Patrol, the Academy Award winning cinematographer, Haskell Wexler, he did a short thing with me. Then we also have links to lots of other government websites. Each year, depending on how you count the numbers, each year between 800 and 1,500 people die in drowsy driving-related collisions. And again, the number's gone down a little bit over the last several years, but that's just because cars have been getting safer. Airbags have really helped a lot of people. But one is too many.
Yes, it is. Well, Phil, I want to thank you very, very much for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Coming up next, it's the Offbeat Report, traveling off the beaten track to find some fascinating stories from the offbeat to the upbeat.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today we are on the road in Ramona at the Fund for Animals Wildlife Center. And my very special guest today is the director, Allie Crumpacker. Allie, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So this center was started back in 1984, I understand, by Cleveland Amory, the noted author and journalist.
That's right. Back in the 1984 when we were part of the San Clemente Island Goat Rescue.
Goat Rescue. So these goats were overrunning the island. They were not native, I understand, and they were going to be killed because they were actually threatening native wildlife. So how many of them did you bring here to Ramona?
According to our records, of over 600 of them came in about a three-year period.
Wow. Now, you've evolved through the years, I understand. Today,
yep.
You don't typically take in non-native species, but you're doing quite a job rescuing native animals and rehabilitating them for release back into the wild.
Yep, we're not working with goats anymore. We've come a long way since then, and really our niche for the community is helping with native predatory wild animals that are found in distress. Whether that's being hit by a car, caught by a dog, they've been poisoned, or they've just come into some trouble where they need help.
Yeah, and I understand you're only one of three wildlife rehab centers in the entire county.
Correct. We're one of the very few.
So it's very important work you're doing. So some of the animals we've seen walking around include bobcats, mountain lion. I understand that you have some coyote pups that you rescued after the May wildfires. Can you give us an update on how the little guys are doing?
Yeah, pup date.
Pup date.
The coyotes, a little boy and a little girl. Mm-hmm. The first one came in 2 days after the poinsettia fire, and the second one came in 4 days after the fires.
Aww.
And both of them had singed fur and really bad burns on all 4 feet.
Poor babies. Now, how are they doing now? Fast forward, what is it, 10 weeks later?
It's been 10 weeks, and they are doing really good. They're both outside now in an enclosure. We mm-hmm. had to wait a long time with a lot of salve and wraps on their feet to build up that flesh again.
Mm-hmm.
But they're doing really great, and they're on target to be re-released in late September.
Now, what do you do to make sure that they don't become too accustomed to people and to make sure that they're able to feed themselves and take mm-hmm. care of themselves once they're released?
Well, even though they're adorably cute, we don't coochie-coo them. We mm-hmm. we try not to make it a happy time, making all the happy time away from us when they're with themselves, with each other, with their buddies, out in their enclosure. And whenever people come around, we want them to run and hide and then get the food after we leave.
And speaking of running, though, I understand that you do some training with them to make sure that they're able to take care of themselves.
But we have to test all of their skills, make sure that they can survive independently upon release. We wouldn't want to be putting coyotes out there that are looking for dog food out of a dog bowl, because that would just cause more conflict, and they might be a repeat patient.
So they go hunting right here inside the
preserve. We make sure that they know how to recognize their food and what to do with it once they find it.
Well, very good. What are some of the other types of native animals that you've taken in and helped through the years?
So what we are mostly focusing on here in Ramona is the coyotes, bobcats, skunks, and then birds of prey, such as hawks, owls, even turkey vultures.
There you go. Now, I understand that you're very successful at it. What's your percentage rate for releasing these animals back into the wild?
So we have a pretty good percentage of release rate for wildlife communities, and that's 40%.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that sounds like not a great number overall, but wild animals don't want to be found by people.
Mm-hmm.
So when people are able to approach an injured animal, they're usually really, really suffering.
So some of them are just too injured to be able to take care of themselves in the wild.
Yeah.
You also have what you call sanctuary animals. These are non-native animals
mm-hmm.
that people have brought in that maybe were exotic pets, that sort of thing. What are some of the sanctuary animals currently living at the preserve?
So the sanctuary residents have been with us for a very long time. It's a program that we had going a good two decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys have been offered a forever home until they pass on, and that includes our pygmy hippo, who's the oldest pygmy hippo in the country.
Pygmy hippo. He's got quite a pair of tusks on him.
A very strange backyard pet choice
yes.
by someone in the past. We also have 2 mountain lions, 10 bobcats, mm-hmm. and a coyote, all of which were hand-raised by people, so they
wow.
didn't grow up understanding how to be a wild animal.
And we're going to go out in just a little bit here, and we're going to be taking a closer look at some of those animals.
Yep.
Now we're out here looking at some of the sanctuary animals that they have. Allie has told us that in addition to the native wildlife that they rehab for release into the wild, they also have a number of sanctuary animals. Now, right now, we're at an enclosure looking at a mountain lion. Allie, can you tell us the history of this mountain lion? What's his name and where did he come from?
So this is Tonka. He is a very large 210-pound mountain lion that was supposed to be somebody's pet.
Wow. That's, not your typical house cat.
No, a little big. A little big to be a house cat.
Yeah.
He was actually confiscated by a veterinarian, thankfully, when the woman who purchased him brought him in for his very first, quote-unquote, kitten exam when he was about 29 days old.
29 days old. Now, this was a woman here in California, and she'd purchased him from somebody, out of state, where these things are actually legal to own?
Right. So there's a couple states where even today it is still legal to breed and sell these types of animals. And Tonka came from Ohio and was shipped here to California, where it's been illegal to own mountain lions for a very long time.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I can certainly see why. So how old is Tonka?
I'd have to look up his exact birthday, but I believe he had his 11th birthday this year.
I think Tonka's making some sounds here.
So it sounded like he was purring.
He was purring. Despite being 200 pounds, he is actually considered a small cat, and small cats purr versus large cats that roar.
Mountain lions don't roar.
They can't roar.
Interesting. Okay. So if you're out on the trail and you hear something purring off in the brush, watch out.
Now, you've got about 13 acres, 4,200 square feet here, a beautiful new facility that's just been opened in, the end of last year?
Yep, we just moved in December. We had our official grand opening in February. Mm-hmm. And thanks to a lot of donors and sponsors, we were able to build this magnificent medical facility. We were working out of a 1920s concrete little block thing before.
Wow.
And we just installed last week a fabulous x-ray machine. And that's a generous thank you going out to the McGrath family for sponsoring that.
Oh, the same folks that donated to the YMCA out there in mm-hmm. Rancho San Diego. Very generous people. Now, this facility is not open to the public. It's not a place that you can tour or go see the animals because, of course, they want to keep them as wild as possible for release. However, if someone has an injured animal that they have found, mm-hmm. can they bring it here?
Yep. Yeah, we always recommend that they either give us a call or call animal control and just talk through the situation first. Make sure that it's safe for them to rescue the animal themselves.
Right.
And then we would give them directions on how to put it into a box, bring it up to us, and check it in so that we can start its medical care.
And if it's too big, if you see a wounded mountain lion or coyote or something, then you can call animal control and they'll transport it? Or
I wouldn't recommend you try to catch an injured mountain lion.
Probably
yourself.
Not a good idea.
It's not a good idea.
Especially a baby one. Mama might be nearby.
Absolutely.
But that's what County Animal Services is for, right? They can transport those to you?
We rely greatly on animal control. The officers are absolutely fantastic at responding to wildlife calls and working with us to make sure that they're getting to the right rehab center, whether it's us or one of the other two.
Very good. Now, I know I found a wounded baby bird not long ago, and it was night, and I was calling all over, and nobody was open. None of the other wildlife places were open, and unfortunately, it didn't make it through the night. What can people do if they're in that situation, if they have, say, a baby bird? I know your focus is predators, but you've mm-hmm. said you do take in other native wildlife on a temporary basis, and you'll try to work with other shelters to find a more long-term rehab facility. Can people bring those kind of animals to you? And if so, during what hours?
So if it's during the day, between 8 and 5, 7 days a week, we will accept any native wild animal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be fairly true for the other organizations as well. So if it's after hours and you believe that it needs critical medical care, that's when you should definitely call animal control. They have mm-hmm. a 24/7 dispatch, and you can talk to them for your options. But otherwise, what we recommend for night rescues is that you keep the animal dark and calm in a warm, safe spot, and then bring it to us first thing in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's very, very good advice. What's new on the horizon? I understand you've got an exciting new project coming up.
Yeah, we are currently fundraising for the remodeling of our raptor aviary. That's this gorgeous 150-foot flight that we have on the property, but it's over 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So it's time that it needs some refurbishing. We work with about 200 birds a year, and we really want to make sure that we upgrade that structure this winter during the downtime, mm-hmm. You know, when the birds are all away migrating, so that we are fresh up and running in the spring. So we are still looking for some sponsors for that.
Very good. Now, you showed me the housing out there where you take interns from all over the world who come here to work with these wonderful animals. Do you also take local interns or community volunteers? How can people get involved and help?
So interns are students that are coming from all over the country, and as a few of those from worldwide. We have 7 interns completing their program right now. And we also have volunteers, like you mentioned, and they need to be at least 16 years of age, mm-hmm. Be able to drive to Ramona, because all the work is here on the property.
Right.
And we ask for a commitment of 4 hours per week for a minimum of 100 hours.
What are some of the kinds of things that the volunteers would be doing?
Oh, they get to do everything like fun laundry, dishes, picking up poop. But of course, they learn all of the medical work, the diagnostics. They get to observe the behaviors of the animals. We use a lot of night cameras because mm-hmm. most of our patients are nocturnal. Mm-hmm. So setting up the cameras during the day, reviewing the footage on the computer to make the behavioral observations to mm-hmm. determine if the animals are ready for release is actually a very time-consuming but fun task.
That does sound exciting. It seems like it would be good training, too, for someone who might have an interest maybe and someday going into veterinary mm-hmm. medicine or getting a job at the zoo or something down the
Absolutely.
Road. Absolutely. Okay. Now, I'm sure, like all nonprofits, that you are fundraising for some of these wonderful projects. How can people find out more about the Fund for Animals Wildlife Center here in Ramona and make a donation or get more information?
So the Fund for Animals is actually a national organization, and here in California, we are the Wildlife Center version of that. Mm-hmm. If you go to fundforanimals.org and then you click on the Wildlife Center link on the left-hand side, you can find all of our information.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to meet with us here at the Fund for Animals Wildlife Center in Ramona. It sounds like there's a lot of activity going on, as we can hear in the background, and we thank you for joining us today on the East County Magazine show.
Thanks for having me.
This is East County Magazine's Capital Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
San Diego Congresswoman Susan Davis has introduced legislation in the House to establish an independent advocate on campus for sexual assault survivors. California's Senator Barbara Boxer introduced the Senate version of the bill last week. The Survivor Outreach and Support Campus Act requires that higher education institutions receiving federal assistance create an independent advocate for campus sexual assault prevention and response. Congresswoman Davis says, "The SOS Campus Act will create a critical resource for sexual assault survivors, an advocate who will be looking out for their rights and interests. This will encourage more survivors to come forward and help create an atmosphere on campuses that these crimes will not be tolerated. The independent advocate would guide sexual assault victims who ask for help with information on how to report the assault to law enforcement, getting emergency medical care, crisis intervention counseling and ongoing counseling, as well as obtaining legal services. The services may be provided on campus in consultation with a rape crisis center, legal organization, or community-based organization. It would also raise awareness on its services and prevention. The bill also prohibits retaliation or penalizing a victim of sexual assault for reporting an assault to the independent advocate. Last year, Senator Boxer and Congresswoman Davis sent a letter to University of California President Janet Napolitano and California State University Chancellor Timothy P. White, and both agreed to voluntarily implement provisions of the legislation by establishing an independent on-campus advocate on every campus. The SOS Campus Act is supported by the University of California, California State University, the Victim Rights Law Center, and the American Association of University Women and other organizations. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barrena.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barrena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Kevin McLeod, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.